Hi everyone, welcome back to Prevention Nation,
where we believe education and awareness can change the culture of violence. I'm Abby Wallace.
And I'm Roy Lutz. Welcome back to Prevention Nation. It's Roy here, and I am with JC, and we are talking about a case that's, I think, disturbing to not just us, but kind of everybody. It sounds like the state of Oklahoma is in a bit of a rage right now, but the recent, court proceedings for Jesse Mack Butler, an 18-year-old out of Stillwater, Oklahoma, and the allegations of rape. I don't even know where to start with this one.
Yeah, there's so much. I guess maybe we should talk a little bit about the details of it for those that might not know.
Okay, so let's throw that out. So Jesse Mack Butler is 18 now at the time of the court decision, but he was 17 years old when at the time of the incidents. And so that's just 1 year ago. We're looking at 2024. He was charged with 11 felony counts, including rape, attempted rape, sexual battery, strangulation, and violating a protection order, which I also is one that I don't know much more about. But I mean, clearly we already had an incident prior to this resulting in a protection order for him to violate even. There are two female victims, and they were both 16 years old when he was 17. And there's also some conversation around a third victim who's only 14. So he had 11 felony counts with two victims, strangulation, and he was initially facing 78 years in prison, but he only got 150 community service hours and some counseling until he's 19, so weekly counseling until he's 19. Oh, and he's got also a curfew, and what was the other one? He was banned from social media.
Oh, yes, very enforceable.
Very enforceable.
As an 18-year-old.
For 11 felony counts with two different victims, both who made victim statements in court. So I don't even know. I mean, so what do we want to talk about first? Why the move from 78 years to 150 hours community service? Why did that happen, Jason?
I looked for information. I couldn't find any reasoning. The judge, her name was Susan Worthington. I couldn't find any information as to why the sentence was changed, was lightened up. And the other thing that gets me too, the community service, he's also going to have this expunged from his record. He's not going to have to register as a sex offender.
Nope.
Which means that the chances of him being able to do this again, it's easier.
Yeah, I think it's easier, but then also expungement, when I think about criminal records, it's a major challenge for people with a criminal record to get jobs, to go to college, to do all these other things. And, you know, that's a whole separate conversation about what are we doing with drug charges and all sorts of things that are non-person-to-person, non-violent offenses, and how that permanently impacts a person for their entire life. Meanwhile, you have a kid here, a man. He is a man. Thank you for recognizing that. But he is a man who nearly murdered, and we'll talk more about that, these girls. And it's going to be expunged, and he's going to go on to college and get jobs and make – he's going to be very affluent. And that's what we're going to get into also here in a second, is why – some of the reasons, that, I think, contributing factors why he got such a light sentence. But, hey, he's going to go on to a wonderful, long, affluent life.
We definitely wouldn't want to, mar him or make life difficult for him, is kind of the feeling that I'm getting. It's like, why ruin this kid's life? Which is something I hear all too often in situations like this. Why should one bad decision
impact? Well, we have the Brock Turner, and we have countless cases. I mean, we even have local cases where we know that this is occurring, where people are not being held truly accountable because they're young and we don't want to,
But the damage is carried for the rest of the life, of your life from by the survivor.
Absolutely.
You know, their life is impacted for the rest of their life.
Yeah, we just did a movie viewing from a 2012 case in Roll Red Roll about Steubenville, Ohio, where we had that same situation. A girl brutally raped and assaulted by multiple boys who were on a football team, and let's not ruin their lives, and let's not do any serious jail time. Well, I mean, and that gets us to what is this privilege that got Jesse Mack Butler 150 hours of community service for 11 felonies, person-to-person violent crime. Well, one, we know that both the judges involved in this, Jason Reese and Susan Worthington, have strong ties to, what was it, Oklahoma State University, OSU there. And Jason Reese, specifically connections to the football program. Well, we also know that Jesse's father was a director of their athletic programming there. So,
do we know if Jesse had planned to go?
Boy, I don't know the details.
That would be interesting to find out if he planned to go to Oklahoma State. I mean, he's a big kid in the photos that I've seen. Like, yeah. could be a college football player. I believe so.
Yeah, so these are some details we're not entirely sure of. It's a little speculation, but I think it's reasonable speculation that he somehow this connection with the Oklahoma State University football team and the athletic program, and then his situation and connection to all that hats to be involved here, I would think.
I think so too. And then I think he comes from a fairly privileged family. I did see the video footage of when they came to arrest him and take him in, and the way that they spoke to him and his mother, and it was just very unlike how you typically see.
Yeah.
Folks get arrested.
I'm looking down the news right now. I see people getting arrested, thrown down, tossed around, nearly beat up or more. For doing far less or nothing at all. And meanwhile, this kid, they go to him and it's just polite conversation.
Explain
with him and the family.
Make sure that his mother knows how to come in and retrieve him and where to go and
all people, when being arrested, should be treated with that same level of privilege. I'm not saying all people. I'm not saying he should have been thrown to the ground or beat. We shouldn't do that to anybody. But how is he getting one different kind of treatment and everybody else something else? Yeah, it's... I'm not really sure.
I think what's interesting to me is that he was 17 at the time of the incident. And when it was prosecuted at that time, he was tried as an adult, which is why he was facing, I think, the 78 years and the 11 felonies. So I'm trying to wrap my head around why Judge Worthington would go back now and make it youth offense, which is what allowed for the community service. So Jesse did no jail time that I'm aware of.
Yep. Nothing significant. I mean, even if it was county jail for a night or two or even a couple weeks or something. But I don't get the indication that was the case, because the victim statements say that they were also subjected, after reporting and after the initial charges, they were still subjected to having to sit in class with them at school.
So
the school,
after the reporting,
didn't do any protection. Yeah.
Leading up to court, he was allowed, permitted to go to school and sit in the same room with the girls that he victimized.
Yeah, which also, and you know, I could do more homework in here, but also, was that in violation of the protection order that was already, because again, that was one of the charges, that he violated a protection order. So at some point there was already an incident where a protection order had to be filed. So one of these girls had already had a protection order filed against him, and yet he's still permitted to come to school and be around them. I'm not really sure why. I'm not sure who dropped the ball there.
That is interesting. So it's leading me to believe, and I don't know this to be sure, maybe you do, that there was an incident of rape, alleged accused rape, with one victim. And then some time went by, and this happened a second time with another victim. So in putting together what we're putting together, I would assume that if there was a protection order, the contact he'd had with one of those two young women had resulted in something that made them uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And that alone would be enough, I would think, to remove him from the classroom. So yeah. I think we need to see not only the role that the university plays, but he was a high school student. What role does that high school play in keeping, and what does that say about keeping any student safe?
Safe.
Not just young women specifically, but in this case, young women, but any student safe.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, You know, and that, so I think to that point, I mean, one, what role does the school have in keeping people safe? Who dropped the ball in the protection order? Three, I don't think he did jail time if he's sitting in classrooms with these girls pending his trial and all that. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of problems with this case, not just the sentencing, but how they handled it all leading up to it, how he was treated at the arrest, and just all of these situations I think are pretty concerning. I also know one of the other part that that bothered me, even thinking about a victim impact statement or, you know, we talk about evidence. You know, I was looking at, you know, only 7 out of 1,000 convictions. There's only about 7 out of 1,000 rapes that are actually convicted in the United States as of 2018. And I just think to myself, when I was looking at that statistic, the reason that, that's part of the reason why that's such a low number is there's no evidence. Well, in this case, there's a video of him actually raping and strangling one of the victims. There's an actual video that he recorded on his phone, that they retrieved on his phone. So how in the world, when you don't, I get it, if you don't have evidence, I get how challenging that could be. But from a prosecution standpoint, like, the kid has a video of him strangling a girl and raping her.
You have a girl, you have a young woman making a statement, and then you have a video recording to back up the statement that's being made.
Yeah, and the girl's statement, you know, the girl's statement is that she almost died. She thought she was going to die. In fact, even the doctor said from the strangulation, the injury to her neck, 30 more seconds and she would have died. So, wow. I mean, that's essentially a video of an attempted murder. I just don't know how, I don't even know how this happens. Stillwater, Oklahoma is in a rage. I mean, it's all over social media. It's all over the news. And unfortunately, like the Brock Turner situation that we had here locally, it's all going to die down after a while. And this kid's going to go on.
You're right. It is everywhere. But what is everywhere is very minimal. There's mm-hmm. not a lot of detail. There's not a lot of information as to why any of these things. And I guess that's going to circle back again to the privilege and the money and the ability to keep things quiet.
Yeah, the ability to move him or to get him to a university and hush-hush things. And yeah, and I think the people in the community there are you know, protesting at the home. And I think they're going to continue to do that. And I mean, it's not going to be fun for the family to have to endure. But, you know, I just think that this is an absolute injustice that what happened. I mean, they shouldn't be just enduring a little misery and stuff like that. This man should be in prison. He harmed two people. He's going to hurt more.
I think that that's something that we should talk about is the video alone. I feel like if someone's going to video something like this, it's because they want to have it, almost like they're proud of it.
Right. This is like those serial killer mementos. Mm-hmm. They keep things from their victims. Why? Yeah, it's really twisted. It's not just even. Yeah, it's twisted.
And as I was listening to some other podcasts and doing a little research on this case, and someone brought up the topic of, you know, mental health, mental wellness, mental illness, and pornography and the type of pornography that we have today. And it wasn't saying that watching certain types of violent pornography would make someone do this, but it did suggest that someone who may be a little on the edge, who might otherwise be inclined impressionable, to do this. Yeah. will watch it and then want to imitate it. Yeah. So I think that there's a bigger discussion here about the role that violence and pornography play in our society, where young men may watch it and see it and want to emulate the situation and almost feel, not in a way that I want to excuse his behavior in any way, but almost be confused to the fact that this is what women want. This is what we're supposed to do, because that's how it's presented in other situations.
I definitely think it has a contributing factor to the psyche and psychological effects of an impact on a man's brain or a boy's young impressionable boy's brain, especially if there's already some disturbances going on there about what is healthy relationship, what is healthy sexual activity. And then that kind of makes me question then, and I hadn't thought about it. With the video, so he recorded a video, but I hadn't even actually thought about what his intent and purpose was for it. But when you talked about pornography and the violence in pornography, did he intend to use this as a means of arousal later? Like, after the fact, did he go home and watch this and use this as a means of arousal? Was he going to attempt to share this with some of his friends? did he share that? Did they also, was it a tool for arousal? So I don't know. It's
or
just
a sextortion kind of thing to get her to do things he wanted later, or I'll show this video. I mean, there's so many possibilities there, but I do think it lends itself to say that I feel pretty strongly that he will do this again in college.
Yeah. And in his
There were no repercussions for him to him. Okay, oh, a year of therapy, so I sit in an office, you know, a curfew, so social media ban. None of these things are very enforceable, you know, to an adult. And now we've just put someone out in the world, and we've also said to two girls and however many else is following this case that that boys can do this. They're allowed.
Well, let's kind of wrap this up then with a couple things. One, the one victim statement just really impressed, made it quite an impression on me, is she said, "You didn't just strangle me with your hands. You strangled my voice, my joy, my ability to feel safe in my own body." End quote. And I just think to myself, as staff here at Safe on Main, an agency that responds to concerns and issues of domestic violence, intimate partner violence, teen dating violence, sexual violence, human trafficking, when we looked at victimization, perpetration of these things, I mean, what message does her statement and his, you know, that statement that you strangled my voice, my joy, my ability to feel safe in my own body, and then his sentence send to victims of rape and sexual assault? And what does their voice even matter in terms of, like, why report? Why even report if this is how, and I'm just going to have to, my voice is gone, my body, I don't feel safe in my body, and they don't even get in trouble.
And that's the thing. Then there's all this talk around so many, like you, the stat you said earlier, underreported, underprosecuted, underconvicted. And it's because it's a lot to ask of a survivor to put themselves out there, to go to court, to face their attacker, to make a victim statement. And then pretty much for everyone, the not everyone, for those in power, the judges, to decide, well, thanks for doing that, but, you know, doesn't really matter, is how it has to feel to that poor girl.
What's the answer then? Like, as an agency and as a society or community, when we're, you know, our agency mission and vision is centered around safe communities, a safe community for everybody. I mean, how do we move forward with that? Because, I mean, to me, honestly, when you said it that way, we always think of our criminal justice system, innocent until proven guilty. And we know for many people, that is absolutely not true. For many people, marginalized populations, people who are more vulnerable to have higher risk contributors and things like that, we know that they're very often not treated innocent until proven guilty. So in a case like this, when you have video, when you have victim impact statements, why is he treated? Shouldn't he be treated guilty until he's proven innocent? Because in my opinion, when we flip it that way, it actually becomes the perpetrator focused. Mm-hmm. Like, he's guilty of rape. He has to demonstrate that what he didn't do was rape. But when we do it this way, when he's innocent until proven guilty and treated like with all this privilege and everything, these girls, it's all incumbent upon them to do all the reporting and to prove this. And it's like, why? They were already victimized. Why is any of the pressure on them?
It perpetuates the system. I think it's a way to I think it's a way to keep it down. It's if we keep doing this, if we keep rewarding bad behavior, which is essentially what this is, then it's going to, the more people that see this, the fewer women are going to report, because they're going to feel like it's pointless. And I think this is a symptom of the broken system, that we just, the privilege, the money, the easier route, the path of least resistance, you know, tends to be.
So what's the answer? What does Safe on Main do with this information, this case? How do we make sure this doesn't happen in Warren County?
What sticks out to me that we could do is educate parents. I feel like if his mother could sit down and talk to the mother of one of the survivors, I mean, how would she then feel? Both of them as parents, both of them wanting good things for their children. Yeah. And I'm, you know, and I understand that she's going to want to defend her son and she's going to want him to have a good life. But he's also not going to have a good life if he isn't a good person and getting the help and the services he needs.
Right.
So I think education and awareness is key, because in helping people find their voice, I guess, helping us being there to support and help someone find a voice, Because I'm going to be honest, it is discouraging. I'm discouraged. You know, it is discouraging. But the only way to combat it, I think, is to just keep going.
Well, I think that's a great place to end this. And is that I think what we can do in thinking about her victim statement, if he strangled her voice, we can help give her voice back. Exactly. We can help by educating people in the community, by making sure that we're doing the best that we can to make sure that people don't respond to a situation like this in that same way. I think as far as their joy, I think we can continue to run programs and events and activities like we do in the community and stuff and show that you can still have joy in your life. And I think as far as ability to feel safe in your own body, I think we can continue to advocate like our court advocates do, to advocate for people's safety. And to advocate through shelter services, through, you know, our shelter director and their programming, to advocate for the safety of people. I mean, safety is paramount to everything. So I think that's what we just keep doing, right?
Yes, that so. And access to services. I think as on a whole, if we can continue to offer, just like you said, the legal and the therapy.
Yeah.
Well, to the survivors.
I think on that note, we'll wrap it up. My only real challenge out is that we know where we're focused and we know what we're doing. But in this case, the Jesse Mack Butler case out of Stillwater, Oklahoma, I say to both, you know, to the judges and magistrates and prosecutors and attorneys everywhere, do better. That is unacceptable. Susan Worthington and Jason Reese and all the people connected in this case, you need to do better because this is inexcusable. So.
I agree. And I'm going to keep watching it. See if those protests make any headway. You know, maybe something will come of that.
Let's hope. Okay. Take care of yourselves and each other.